There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
In the last episode of Wicked and Grim, we discuss part one of Ruby Ridge. Today, we expand further and dive into part two. My name's Ben.
And I'm Nicole, and you're listening to Wicked and Grim,
a true crime podcast. I want to start off and just let everyone know there may be some noises from our mics today. We have new microphone stands and are trying to get used to them. So if you hear things like this,
we're sorry.
We are very sorry. We're trying to get used to them. We will do our best to make absolutely no noise with them.
I feel like, well, they're tabletop mics, so they're, I feel like, a little bit more sensitive to.
They are. Yeah. So we got these so we can actually get ready to record the episodes for video and put them up on YouTube. So this way our mics are out of our face.
Pretty exciting.
So
yeah.
So yeah, that we're getting really close. We're going to be recording some episodes here and we'll let you know when it's available over on YouTube. If you want to go subscribe early, feel free to check it out. It's Wicked Life, link down below. We're doing vlogs and stuff over there too. So
yeah.
We also got to thank some patrons.
We do. We have two to thank.
We do. So we have Joe Burrow and Julia Schroeder.
Awesome. Thank you guys.
Thank you so much. They both signed up and are getting that extra behind the scenes content. We just did a little pre-show that we uploaded over on Patreon.
It wasn't really that little. It was like 13 minutes.
Fair enough. When we do a pre-show, our target is about like 10 minutes, just like a little warm up, you know, checking the mic levels and just bullshit and shooting the shit.
We had a lot to say.
I guess so. So if you want to go check that out, you can check it out over on Patreon. But I know Nicole is really antsy.
I know. The day has come.
For?
Part two.
Of?
Shit, I forget what it's called. What's it called?
Like the Ruby Ridge incident.
Okay. Yeah. I probably would not have remembered that. But anyway, we left kind of like at quite the scene. And this has been on my mind all week.
We did leave it quite the scene, and apparently I got in shit a few times from Nicole because this has been not an easy one for her to get through. Apparently
I had to resist the urge to look up anything.
Were you contemplating it?
Maybe for like a brief second.
Wow.
I didn't though.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. I'm going to do a little quick recap. Just like a 20 second little like in your face. Here's what happened last episode. So in part one, we discussed Randy Weaver and his family. We talked about how he and his wife, Vicky, had moved to an isolated ridge, which is now dubbed Ruby Ridge, to live off grid and raise their family together. However, despite a dispute with neighbors and an undercover FBI agent who managed to coerce Randy into selling illegal firearms, had him in quite a tough spot. He was facing charges and refused to work out a deal with the FBI as an informant. This, unfortunately, led Randy to missing his trial and seeking refuge in his secluded property. Authorities knew Randy could be ready to fight at any moment and tried to apprehend him. So by doing so, they began intense surveillance and even sent a military reconnaissance team with M16 rifles fully kitted up in ghillie suits. The team closed in on the home, a cabin perched in the middle of their property, and attempted to gain the family dog Stryker's attention by throwing a rock. The plan worked, and they got Stryker's attention. And now the dog, along with Randy's son Sammy and a family friend Kevin, who was living with them, and they were headed out of the house and headed straight towards the concealed men with rifles in hand.
Gosh. Okay, and just so when he missed his court hearing, that was because the parole officer had told him the wrong date, though, too, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So see, there's so many pieces to this that just seems so almost unfair, I guess.
So. Oh, it's a big case.
Yeah.
And like you say, it is very unfair to say the least.
Okay, so Frigg, now that we're here, I'm almost just like, shit.
You're just nervous?
I don't know if I want to know what happens.
Well,
I don't feel like it's going to be good.
No?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to divulge what happened, and I'm going to tell you if it was good or bad. Well, I'm sure you can hear that for yourself. But here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this. So as the two boys and the dog were headed in the direction of the reconnaissance team, the marshals hiding in the bush, the reconnaissance team initially withdrew the defense into the woods. So the boys were coming out of the cabin with guns in hand and the dog coming as well. And they kind of backed up and headed back towards the bush.
Okay.
So they hadn't been seen yet, but they managed to reach a pivotal Y junction on a trail. And this was positioned about 500 yards west of their cabin. However, the dog Striker was now sniffing about and knowing something was going wrong. Or someone was around. So Sammy and Kevin trail behind him through this thick foliage. Now, the following events are debated to this day, with conflicting accounts from the agents and the Weavers on what exactly led the unfolding events. But we're going to go with the events that are most recognized as truth.
Okay. Yep, fair.
So according to the agents, one scout claimed to have shouted, quote, "Back off, U.S. Marshal," upon seeing Sammy Weaver approaching, while another asserted to have shouted, "Stop, U.S. Marshal," as they approached. Whatever the case, it was roughly a minute later when Sammy and Striker emerged from the trees near one of the marshals, with the dog Striker approaching one of the concealed marshals who was hiding in a bush. In this critical moment, that very marshal opened fire upon the dog from his concealed position, as he apparently feared Striker was going to attack him, and he fatally shot him all on a whim.
No.
Yes, he opened fire and killed Striker.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Oh my gosh. I'm pissed.
Yeah.
The dog.
If anyone knows Nicole at all, you never hurt the animals.
Well, no. And they were the ones that provoked the dog.
They were the ones who threw the rock at a cabin to get the dog's attention.
Yeah.
So now the dog is, hey, you have my attention. What's up? And they shot him.
And the dog literally has no idea what is going on with anything.
Correct.
Just knows that someone's on the okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'll keep listening.
Well, and not only this, Sammy is standing right there and watched his dog get shot.
Oh, I would actually probably lose my mofo mind.
Striker got shot right in front of his eyes by something that was just hiding in a bush. So Sammy didn't even know who or what shot his dog.
Holy shit.
He did yell out, quote, "You've killed my dog, you son of a bitch." And then he aimed his rifle into the underbrush in the direction from the concealed shot. And he pulled the trigger.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That is, it's getting wild here. But honestly, like, okay, maybe I shouldn't keep talking, but if I was armed and in this situation, I would lose my shit too.
Well, and put it this way, you're probably only assuming that you're next. You don't know who's in the bush. You don't see them. This is a kid who watched his dog get shot and is now in a self-defense position because he has no idea who's in there.
Well, and that dog is like a family member.
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the marshals did allege that one of them shouted "back off, U.S. Marshal," and the other one shouted "stop, U.S. Marshal." But no one can clarify. It's just these two just saying, yeah, I said something.
Well, and to a kid, what does that mean even?
Even if they did, how do they know if he heard them?
Yeah.
Clearly, probably not, because the kid kept pursuing.
But would a 10-year-old kid also even know what that means?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know if I would have at 10. I'd be like, cool.
I don't know if Sammy's 10. I'm not sure of his age, to be fair.
Oh, okay. I don't know why I thought 10.
No.
Okay.
Well, I do know he is a younger kid about that age, but I don't know if he is 10 per se. He could be around 15 or something for all I am sure of. I didn't actually look up his age. But with the shots now being fired from two different directions, Kevin quickly dove to find cover behind a tree stump. And he retaliated with a single unaimed shot into the bush. Kind of, there's firing happening over here. I'm just returning fire. Because they are, under siege. We just went over this with, hey, Some strange person in the bush is shooting at us. And when Kevin shot into the bush, he hit one of the marshals and killed Deputy U.S. Marshal William Francis, a.k.a. Bill Deegan.
Oh, man. Is that the one that killed the dog? Or is that a different one, I wonder, hey?
I'm not too sure.
Okay, but geez, it's dark out. They're like disguised.
Mm-hmm.
This is a freaking disaster.
Yeah. So now responding to the gunfire upon them, the marshals once again shot in the direction of the boys. And Sammy Weaver was shot in the arm. Now being shot himself, he quickly turned and attempted to flee up the hill towards the house where he'd come from. However, another shot rung out from the marshals and hit Sammy square in the back and dropped him to the ground dead.
Seriously?
Yes. They shot him in the back.
Oh my gosh. Okay, and this is the actual son, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah. This has just gotten real out of hand here. I don't think this should be okay at all.
No. Subsequent ballistic analysts later on revealed that a total of 19 rounds were discharged during the intense confrontation.
Whoa. I mean, I knew something kind of like this maybe would have gone down, but this is brutal.
It's intense. I can't imagine being in that situation, let alone a child or a kid or a teen being in that situation. Kevin, understandably, is now like scared shitless. So he got to his feet and he managed to run back to the cabin in the whole aftermath of the firefight. And when he got to the cabin, apparently the cries and screams of the whole Weaver family were like echoing through the woods as Kevin actually told them the events of what happened and the fact that Sammy was now dead.
Gosh.
Randy was apparently so overwhelmed with grief, he was rolling on the floor, pounding his fists, and even went outside and was firing his gun into the air in a fit of rage. Vicky, his wife, who's kind of like being the pillar of family strength in that moment, did her best to console her distraught husband and the rest of the family as well.
Wow. Well, I mean, they literally just killed two of their family members.
They did.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So the Weaver family soon managed to actually make their way out of the home and retrieve Sammy's lifeless body.
Oh, geez.
Meanwhile, the agents called for reinforcements and asserted that they were, quote, pinned down by gunfire and urgently needed assistance. I mean, strangely, despite their heightened surveillance around the property and also being right there, apparently pinned down, or that's important because if you're pinned down in the same spot, you'd probably see your downed victim you just shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
The agents claimed they had no idea Sammy Weaver had died.
They would have known where they were shooting, I feel like, because they would have had, I don't know, technology or whatever to be able to see in the dark and like see their target.
Well, no, they did have like night vision and stuff like that they were equipped with, but it was more so like through the trees and the bush and that sort of stuff was more so the problem. But the problem, a big thing here is they claimed they were pinned down by gunfire. Pinned down means you can't move. You're in this spot. You can't go anywhere. Hence why you need backup. However, they did not know Sammy died, and the family was actually able to come to retrieve his body. So they did not see the family come up because they would have shot at them too. And they didn't see his dead body. They were not pinned down.
No. And no one was armed towards them at that moment, really.
Oh, they probably were.
But
if there was a firefight in the bush and your kid was just killed, I'm pretty sure you're walking out.
But it's not like they're like hunkered down and just like, you know.
No, they weren't being pinned down. No.
Yeah.
But they claimed they were.
Jeez.
So the reports of casualties and the Weavers perceived as armed and dangerous, additional snipers and special agents were dispatched to the tense standoff. In a marked departure from the standoff rules of engagement, which typically mandates firing only when agents face imminent danger, which arguably that one marshal who shot the dog claims because he feared the dog could have attacked him. We'll just assume he's right on that, okay, because that's completely up for debate, but we'll just assume, we'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So assume that. You can only fire when faced with imminent danger. However, the FBI decided to alter the rules in this scenario now. Now agents and snipers were authorized to shoot, quote, any adult male with a weapon if the shot can be taken without endangering children. That's regardless of any immediate threat to the agents whatsoever. The approval of legitimacy to this charge remains subject of debate. There's some paperwork that says it was never approved, but they did it anyways. And some saying that this guy is the one who told us to, but he's then going back and saying it didn't. It's a whole convoluted thing. But regardless, that was the situation at the time.
And that one boy should never have been shot. Really?
No.
There's no way that would have been approved. I can't see that.
There was no immediate threat. His back was turned. He was running.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That just gave me a visual. That's actually sad as hell. Yeah,
it really is.
Oh.
Now the family was preparing to pray over Sammy's body before they buried him. And they currently had him in the birthing shed, the one that we had talked about in the last episode. So Randy, Sarah, and Kevin were armed as they needed to be. And unfortunately, now they became the focus of the waiting snipers who were called in as backup. So these three were leaving the house to head out to the shed to where Sammy's body was. And as the three approached the shed to mourn, a shot rang off through the air and Randy was hit near his armpit by a sniper's bullet. Sarah quickly leapt into action and shielded her father from another shot as they rushed back towards the house where Vicky, his wife, held the door wide open with her 10-month-old Elizabeth in her arms. Now, Randy and Sarah made it inside. But as Kevin entered, sniper Lon Hurucci fired again towards the open door of the house. While he claims he was aiming for Kevin, the bullet tragically hit another target first. Heartbreakingly, the shot tore through Vicky Weaver's face, killing her instantly before it followed through and hit Kevin in the chest.
Okay, so sorry, who is Vicky? Is that the mom?
That's Randy's wife, yes.
Okay.
As she is holding their 10-month-old child in her arms.
Holy shit. And it hit her where?
In the face.
So she's gone, dead. Yep. And then hit Kevin.
In the chest.
And isn't Kevin also a kid, technically?
Or would he
be considered an adult?
He's probably an adult because, a little bit of a spoiler alert here, he was tried later as an adult.
Okay.
So I'm not too certain on his age, but he is definitely of an adult age, but he's still certainly young.
Oh my gosh, this does not seem okay. This does not seem okay.
No, it's not.
So now the dog's dead, a kid's dead, and now the wife's dead as well.
Yep. And Randy and Sarah were now forced to drag Vicky's lifeless body into the house with her arms still wrapped around and cradling the infant.
Good. Okay. Wow. Goodness gracious.
So they laid her down in the kitchen. And due to the family now being pinned down by military snipers in their home, this is where she would remain for several days.
Okay. Oh, this just keeps getting worse.
Yeah. They couldn't leave the house.
And literally, oh my gosh, she's just like in front of the family, just having this, like she's, you know, decomposing.
Like,
oh, I can't even say it. Like I just, yeah. Okay. Oh, that's so, so bad.
It's horrible.
Mm-hmm. And then they weren't able to lay Sam to rest like they wanted either.
He's currently laying in the shed.
Okay.
So Kevin, though, was now gravely injured. He had a shot to the chest. And over the course of the following days, while he was tended to, he pleaded with Randy to end his pain and misery. Randy, however, refused to give up on him.
Well, yeah, he needed medical attention, I guess.
He did, but they couldn't get it. They were pinned down. The only way they could do this was by handing themselves over to the FBI. And who knows what's going to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, get this, though. This is really fucked up. You're going to hate this. After the second confrontation, federal agents armed with radio equipment, because remember, they had like speakers underneath this home. They had shit going all over, right?
Oh, so they would know the dire situation in there.
Oh, they would.
Holy fuck. Okay.
But get this. Armed with all this equipment, they taunted the besieged Weavers by probing into their daily lives. The following morning, they took to the radio and speakers, by saying very loudly to them, quote, "We had pancakes for breakfast today. How about you? Vicky, what did you eat today? How did you sleep last night, Vicky?"
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that beyond fucked?
That is just almost inhumane. This is.
Now, the FBI claimed they didn't know about Vicky's death, but again, they had the surveillance. They had a sniper who shot her in the face. They would have saw it. Bullshit. Well,
yeah, they would have heard.
Yeah.
There's no way that they wouldn't have heard.
There's no way. Absolutely not.
That is disgusting. I am so fucking disgusted right now. Yeah.
So you're telling me a trained sniper wouldn't know he hit a target?
Mm-hmm.
A trained military sniper.
A target that was literally holding a baby.
Yeah. And one that the family had to drag into the house and probably before they closed the door.
Mm-hmm. Man, this is so, I don't know why I was wanting to hear more of this. This is fucked.
Now, in another odd turn, the agents actually deployed a robot to go up and try and connect with the family. However, the robot was carrying a phone, you know, to talk as well. It was armed with a gun to establish communication. And why the fuck does a robot have a gun?
Well, and who is supposed to go out to greet the robot? Because anyone that would, unless it's a child who could still probably be hurt, like they're not going to go out there.
Exactly. Like, the whole Weaver family, everyone inside the house was extremely skeptical of this. Like, this is a fucking trap. Even yeah. The agents aren't going to shoot us. Why the fuck does the robot have a gun? If I go out there and try and grab the phone, it's going to shoot me.
Yeah.
Or someone like it's.
Because in their mind, too, the kids weren't even safe.
No.
So.
Yeah. So like they're skeptical because there's even radio reports now. Going out and like this is news radio reports, right? Like, mm-hmm. So the news knows about this and they are saying how Randy had killed a federal agent. But I mean, it was Kevin who had shot into the bush in retaliation and self-defense and did kill one. So one agent is dead, mm-hmm. But they are blaming it on Randy purposefully killing an agent.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and they did not also probably state that one of the agents killed the kid.
No.
Who was running away of fear.
Or the mother, who was holding a 10-month-old child.
Yeah.
So, they're basically suspecting this is a whole trap. And they're like, if we take anything, it's probably going to lead to our downfall or even a potential death, right? And, of course, how are they going to paint that in the public's eye? It's just they knew they were fucked. They knew they were screwed. They didn't know what else to do. But eventually the standoff saw an individual by the name of Bo Gritz, who was a former renowned Green Beret. And if you remember from last episode, Randy went through Green Beret training.
Mm-hmm.
So Bo was called in to negotiate with Randy. Over 3 intense days, Bo succeeded in persuading Randy to come down from the mountain home. The breakthrough came when Bo assured Randy of assistance in obtaining a complete and fair trial. That's what he wanted, because he knew if he just gives up, he's like, I'm going to be shot, killed. Who knows what they're going to paint me as? I'm just going to be locked away. What about my family? What about my home? All these questions, right? So Bo assisted in ensuring, no, you're going to get a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
The evidence, everything, you name it.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine that this just amplified for him too, because now his kids, there's no one else.
Yeah.
They don't have a mom.
Correct. So Bo did succeed in getting Randy to come down, and Kevin was also safely brought down from the mountain for medical treatment and survived his injuries.
That's good.
On the second day of negotiations, Bo actually contacted an attorney whose name is Jerry Spence, who expressed a serious interest in taking Randy's case. And I'm sure that would have been part of the negotiations of a fair trial as well.
Yeah.
Is I have this individual who's willing to potentially defend you, right?
Yeah.
So on the day Randy surrendered to law enforcement, he met with Jerry Spence, who, Jerry, by the way, is known for his Western courtroom attire, which I absolutely fucking love. I just see him in, like, in my head, I picture a cowboy hat and a bolo tie, and he's just loving life. But more importantly, he's also known for never losing a criminal jury trial.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Got a good lawyer.
Yes. So Jerry began the meeting. He did actually represent him in court, but as of right now, they're just talking about the representing, like, can I represent you? Are we going to take this, right?
Okay.
So Jerry began the meeting by expressing his disagreement with how the Weavers' political and religious beliefs were. However, he emphasized his commitment to Randy's right to a fair trial, and after listening to Randy's story, he agreed to defend him in court for free.
Okay. So he obviously, if he thought that this was a losing battle, he probably wouldn't have offered to do it.
Probably not.
Yeah, he knew that he had a strong case. Yeah.
But not even necessarily a strong case, though, is I'm sure that was part of it, but a bigger part here, which I'm going to talk about here. I'll do it right now. So this next paragraph I have says, in a letter to a Jewish friend attempting to dissuade him from actually taking the case, the friend was like, don't fucking take this case. Jerry actually asserted that the defense goes beyond what he's talking about, because he didn't want him to take this case because, hey, Randy's a potential racist and all these groups he's a part of and stuff, and very radical.
Yeah.
So Jerry's like, this is beyond the whole radical and racial separatism and everything that it may represent. This was about a whole greater concern of a government losing respect for an individual's rights. So it wasn't that he was defending him because he's like, we can win this. Mm-hmm. He's defending him because it's the right fucking thing to do.
Wow. Which, honestly, with everything that Randy has gone through, like, thank goodness that he got this.
100%.
He deserved that big time.
Oh, definitely. And for that alone, I want to make Jerry our badass of the day, because is fucking badass.
Yeah.
Not only is he taking this case, he's fighting against the government, he's doing it for free. He also stood up to a peer who's like, don't do this because, hey, he's racist against our people. He's like, it's not about that, bitch.
Yeah. So, well, I feel like a lot of the lawyers, too, probably would have just ran for the hills.
Probably.
With this kind of case.
Yeah. So the trial of Randy Weaver and Kevin Harris, because Kevin was also being brought to court because, hey, he shot someone, right? Began on April 12th, 1993, in a heavily attended courtroom in Boise, Idaho. The courtroom had heightened security measures, including metal detectors, X-ray machines, and federal marshals who were armed and ready. It was all anticipated because it was a very potentially heated trial, right?
Yeah.
So there could be potential issues. So they wanted to make sure that they were ready for anything that could occur. So the jury, but I do have to say that's kind of also bullshit, because at the same time, it's like, oh, federal marshals are on the stand, so we're going to have federal marshals defend the courtroom.
I know.
That's kind of biased, but hey.
I did think that, but I was like, I'll just keep listening.
Yeah. So. Regardless, the jury was comprised of 7 women and 5 men who are ranging from age of 31 to 72 years old, including individuals with varied educational backgrounds, from high school dropouts to MBAs. So they had quite the diverse jury at hand.
That's good.
In the prosecution's opening statement, attorney Howen and Lindquist portrayed Randy as a racist planning to wage war against the government since 1982. They also painted him as a hate-filled extremist, emphasizing the threat of violence that he posed to the people around him. Representing Kevin Harris, David Nevin presented a very good self-defense theory in his opening statement. He's like, hey, self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically it, right? Jerry Spence, the one that we were talking about, who is our badass of the day, concluded the opening statements and personalized Randy to the jury, seeking to invoke empathy, and painted a very compelling picture of Randy as a loving and devoted family man striving to protect his family to lead a peaceful life.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Where do you think this is going to go? How do you think it's going to end up?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, I don't have the faintest clue.
Okay. Understandable. We're up against such a interesting foe in the courtroom here, the government, right? So it's
I know the way I want it to go, but I feel like it probably won't go that way. I mean, I want Randy to be
acquitted?
Not guilty or whatever.
But fair enough. Okay.
I feel like that would be way too good to be true.
Yeah. Well, there is a whole lot surrounding this case. One of the things that was happening quite frequent was the government was actually hiding evidence and only bringing it up when it benefited them.
Oh,
and
my God.
All the stuff needs to be on the fucking table, right?
Yeah.
So they would frequently be like, actually this thing. And then they're like, what the fuck is this? Like, we need to have all this out in the open. So that was a very frequent.
That's dirty.
It is. It was a very frequent and dirty thing that they were doing in the court. But the government actually started this case by calling U.S. Marshal Larry Cooper, a witness to the death of Agent Deegan and Sammy Weaver, which also tells me right there, he was a witness to the death of Sammy Weaver.
He saw.
He saw. They didn't know he was dead. Like, you know, are you fucking kidding me? Clearly you did. Anyways, Cooper testified that Kevin Harris shot Deegan first, triggering the subsequent exchange of gunfire. He was the first to pull the trigger.
Oh my gosh. He's just up there lying.
Yep.
Like under oath though.
Yep.
Okay. That is not all right.
Now get this though. In response to a defense request, Cooper appeared in court the second day dressed in the same camouflage uniform that he wore on August 21st, the night of the shootout, and carried the same gun he had that day. So the whole defense was aimed to make the jurors experience what Kevin and Sammy would have experienced and witnessed. These kids out in the bush see this.
Yeah.
You're telling me they're not going to try and fight for their life?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the fact that one of them just killed their dog.
Yep.
Right? Which honestly to anyone is a big deal, but especially a kid, I feel like.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, the dog plays such a big part of this. Like even during cross-examination, Cooper struggled. He had a silencer on his gun and he struggled to explain like why the silencer actually had been on the gun at all. But he did admit to having orders to lure the dogs away from the Weaver's home and shoot them, removing them from, quote, the outside of the picture.
Oh, my gosh.
So Jerry Spence, our defending attorney, underscored Stryker's role by asking this question. Quote, now the dog's biggest crime was that he was following you. Isn't that true?
Yeah, he didn't do anything.
No.
He didn't do a single thing.
No.
We don't even know if he would have attacked them.
No, we don't.
Yeah, no idea.
No, he provoked the dog to come here. And when a dog comes here, you're like, oh shit, I'm going to shoot it? Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh my gosh.
Another crucial prosecution witness was Agent Fadley, who was the undercover operative who solicited Randy to modify the shotguns illegal and sell them to him that we talked about in the first episode. So under cross-examination, Fadley acknowledged the difficulty in persuading Randy into breaking the law. He's like, yeah, it was hard as fuck. Like I really had to like get him to do this. Damn near begging him, I'm sure. And in a pivotal exchange, Chuck Peterson, Jerry Spence's co-counsel, prompted Fadley to admit that he received no payment for his undercover, he would receive no payment for his undercover work unless there was a conviction.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah. Ultimately only like really incentivizing him to persuade Randy by any means necessary. And I mean, that honestly sounds a lot like fucking bribery to me,
yeah.
In my opinion.
That doesn't seem right at all.
If you convince him to sell you some shit and we get a conviction out of it, we'll give you some money.
Well, and it just doesn't make any sense either because Randy thought that they were friends, right?
Yeah.
And like anyone in that situation where you have a friend, someone you care about, like begging you for something and like repeatedly, like you're probably going to cave at some point and like help your fucking friend.
So there are certain morals at question here is what degree did they go to really coerce Randy into doing this?
That almost makes me this whole case almost makes me like emotional because it just doesn't seem.
Oh, it's a roller coaster. And a half. It's everywhere up, down. And it's just nothing but bullshit on the end of the government. Now, closing arguments began on June 15th, 1993. And Kim Lindquist, who was leading for the prosecution, outlined the case's theme for reasons of conviction, asserting that Kevin Harris had murdered Bill Deegan and portraying Vicki Weaver's death as a tragic accident. So he attributed the deaths of Vicki and Sammy to Randy and Kevin and their desire to attack the government. So to quote him, quote, this whole thing is a tragedy. But the cause of the tragedy was the resolve of the Weaver family, and that translates into murder. So he's basically saying Randy and Kevin are the ones who murdered Sammy and Vicky.
Wow.
Yeah, he's saying they're responsible for their deaths.
It doesn't make any sense, though, because the other people are, like, highly trained.
Yes.
But yet, it was just, like, an accident.
Yes.
That is so messed up.
Yes. Beyond messed up.
Beyond.
Like you said, these people are supposed to be highly trained.
Yeah.
Yet, they didn't know two targets were downed. They were unable to actually coerce these people in a manner that's appropriate. For example, they set a robot with a fucking gun. Mm-hmm. They lied.
Taunted them.
They changed regulations in order to fire as they please. And they're lying on trial in under oath on the stand. Manipulative? I think so.
Disgusting.
Yeah. So the jury deliberations commenced on Wednesday, June 16th, with jurors sequestering in a room with green walls, institutional green walls, very boring and bland, I'm sure very standard. And they were shielded from, of course, the outside world and any sort of forces or anything like that. I'm trying to think of a word.
To sway them kind of thing.
Persuasion. Like, yeah, there we go. Any persuasion on one way or another. Television trucks were filling the parking lots. Reporters anxiously awaited any updates and were ready to go at any moment. 13 tension-filled days later, on June 29th, a juror suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and a chronic heart condition would no longer be able to continue serving the jury, which led to their replacement by an alternate. And now the jury needed to start from the beginning with their deliberations, and they promptly requested to review the entrapment evidence once again. So finally, that leads us to July 8th, where the jury had finally reached their verdict. The packed and silent courtroom witnessed an emotional moment as the verdicts were read. Randy Weaver and Kevin Harris, overwhelmed with emotion, embraced each other upon hearing the findings. Randy Weaver was acquitted of all charges except for failure to appear in court and committing a crime while on bail release. Kevin Harris was completely acquitted of all charges. When a deputy mentioned taking Kevin back to jail for processing, his attorney, Nevin, firmly stated, "The hell you will. He's going out the front door with me." And that's exactly what happened. Kevin Harris left that courtroom that day holding his mother's hand out the front door.
Oh my gosh. That literally gave me goosebumps. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I feel like what I was worried is that the jury would almost worry about saying that they weren't guilty.
The repercussions.
Yeah. Like, because it's the government. What the fuck are they going to, like, they could attack them, or like, I thought some of them might be afraid kind of thing.
No, that's a very reasonable response. Yeah. I mean, it's not like people haven't been claiming to have been stalked or harassed by the government before.
Yeah.
So.
Whoa. Okay. I mean, I'm shocked, but in the best of ways.
But that's what you were after. We talked about it at the very beginning. You're like, yeah, you want to be acquitted of all charges. Uh-huh. I'm not guilty. And I mean, he's not acquitted of all, but yeah. So like his whole acquittal, of course, is a relief, but the conviction was bittersweet because he did actually have to return to jail. Judge Lodge dismissed the second conviction, ultimately, as it had been proven that Randy committed no crime during the siege, but he was sentenced to be between 18 and 24 months for failure to appear in court, which is he had that thing earlier in last episode. So having already served 14 months, he was now set to be released sometime before Christmas. And indeed, in December of 1993, he finally regained his freedom, and he promptly flew to Iowa to be with his daughters and spend their heartfelt Christmas together.
Oh my goodness.
In the aftermath of the trial, in August of 1994, Randy Weaver filed a lawsuit for wrongful deaths of Sammy and Vicky Weaver. The case settled before trial, so it didn't even go to court, for $3.2 million in August of 1995. However, the government refuses to acknowledge any wrongdoing in the event whatsoever, but they paid out $3.5 before trial. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they know they did some shit wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin Harris also filed a lawsuit, which was settled for $438,000.
Hmm.
Gary Spence, who represented Randy, as I mentioned, free of charge, was granted exclusive rights by the Weavers to tell his story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
After the trial, the U.S. Senate appointed a special commission to investigate the incident at Ruby Ridge. And what followed was a very comprehensive 500-page document reporting the government agents' wrongdoing during the siege. So, I mean, they say they did no wrongdoing, but there's a document from the government saying, yeah, you fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, lastly, astonishingly enough, Lonnie Hirochi, the sniper responsible for Vicky Weaver's death, faced no punishment in the aftermath. Although he was initially charged with involuntary manslaughter and was being brought to trial, a new prosecutor elected to fire the special prosecutor and dismiss the case against him entirely. So he never spent a day in jail. He retained his job and he did not lose a single day's pay for murdering a woman holding her 10-month child as she tried to hold the door open for her family who was fleeing from a barrage of bullets. That is the Ruby Ridge incident.
Wow. Way to end on a shit note there.
I know, right?
Mm.
It was a rough case. It was a rough one to research, but it was, I don't know, it was very different and it made my stomach churn. It wasn't like it was, I don't know, there's some grotesque, disgusting shit that happens in this world, especially when it comes to murders and a lot of these trials and convictions that we go through. But this one, it's just, I don't know, it's different in a lot of ways because the government is supposed to be there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And they did everything but help them.
It's scary.
It is.
Yeah, because I feel, oh my gosh. I mean, you could get yourself in that situation and there was almost no way out for him.
No,
really.
There wasn't. No. He was surrounded. He was pinned down. He was shot at. He was just screwed
over. Well, they were just eating pancakes for breakfast. Like, good God.
Could you imagine being sitting there grieving the death of your wife who you cannot even take outside? The death of a loved one's just the person's laying there on the floor, as you said, decomposing.
Uh-huh.
And there's speakers under your house being like, hey, we had pancakes for breakfast today. What'd you eat? What'd you eat, Vicky?
You know, honestly, I am sometimes like a little bit hot-headed and I...
Sometimes you don't say. Not a lot of people know that, but I'm married to you. Trust me, I know that.
I would actually have handled things a lot differently than Randy. So I honestly feel like he did a very good job.
Oh, he did.
Because I would have lost my motherfucking mind.
I could see you going like full fucking Rambo, tying a like bandana around your head, war paint, knifing your teeth, crawling through the fucking trees. Yeah.
And it would still be because of my dog.
Yeah.
I mean, but the dog and then now the son and like the wife and stuff. But it's just like, I feel like I would have just gone on a fucking rampage.
Understandably.
But then
I think a lot of people would have.
You're also, it's hard to say too, because you're like really mourning deaths and stuff too. And then you have your own, like your family. He was the only parent figure at that moment, right? Yeah.
I think a lot of the reason why Randy kept as cool of a head as he did was he knew that if he gave in, if he shot at them, if he went out there, he knew it would have been used against him. And mm-hmm. they were already trying to use things against him. The radio was already saying how he murdered a U.S. Marshal.
And he wanted to be there for his family because like, yeah.
Anything he did would have just given him more ammunition against him and his family, like you're saying.
He's smart.
He is.
Yeah, he was thinking.
Yeah, two steps ahead.
Yeah, wow. What a story. This is just like bizarre.
Yeah, you can thank Joe Rogan for me hearing this story, actually. I was cruising Instagram and there was a clip of him on his podcast talking to someone about the Ruby Ridge incident. And I was like, the what now? And I gave it a quick Google and I was like, the fuck?
Yeah. I know. I don't necessarily feel satisfied.
No.
Right now.
Well, I think there should be some satisfaction in knowing that there was charges that were acquitted and there was lawsuits filed and they did get some money in return. Though I'm not saying money is in any way, shape or form a retribution for the lives that were lost, but it's something to help you move on. And not only that, it's so fucking good knowing that they didn't try fighting it because they know mm-hmm. they're fucking wrong.
Well, yeah.
They know what they fucking did.
When something doesn't go to court and like it's paid out beforehand, there's reasons.
Yeah. Very big reasons.
Yeah.
So anyways, hopefully you guys enjoyed this two-parter. We got some more one-parters coming for you soon. We did a two-parter recently and now this one. So we're going to stick to some one-parters here for a little bit before we do another one. So give you guys a bit of a breather with that. But if you want to check out some of our socials, all the links are down below. We're very active on YouTube now. We got Patreon where we're doing some stuff over there. Get the exclusive behind the scenes and extra content like the extra episode at the end of the month every time. So you can go check all that out.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good job on this one. You did really good.
It was interesting. I know I say that about so many cases, but it's like interesting is such a word that can describe so many of these in so many different ways. And that's exactly what this is. Very interesting, intriguing, and fucking sad.
Mm-hmm.
So sad. But anyways, my emotions are beside the point. We'll talk to you guys next time. And until then,
stay wicked.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.